T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app today.
I have a confession. I'm addicted to the news.
You know I'm totally off script right now.
Journalism is cool again, and you have endless content, let's be honest.
And this is how I got elected, by being off script.
Now, Mark Reardon.
Well, I think he's got a lot of hand movement. I've never seen so much hand movement. I said, is he crazy, or is that just the way he acts?
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
All right, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Off and running here for a Thursday edition of the Mark Reardon Show. Plenty to cover, and we're almost to the weekend. And really, I guess it's even weirder because it's almost the 1st of June. I'm going to take a couple of days off next week, Monday and Tuesday, as a programming note. Really, nothing in particular. Might do a little fishing in Howard County and perhaps a little golf on Monday. So looking forward to that. But we have to get by the next couple of days. Of course, we have a Reardon Roundtable coming up tomorrow. I had my entire program sheet in front of me just a little bit ago here. And by a little bit ago, I mean like 15 seconds ago on my iPad. And I think I deleted it. So let me pull. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there it is. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate your support. You can always follow on Twitter at Mark Reardon, KMOX. Of course, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcast at KMOX.com/Reardon. Hey, Dave, I was going to mention something because you can download the radio.com app, which is awesome. My wife was listening on the radio.com app the other day, and you probably don't get a chance to do this, and I really don't either, but she pulled up Total Information PM. She was listening, and on the radio.com app, there's a picture of Carol and Alex Degman, and it completely crops me out of the picture.
Oh, that's a shame. What happened with that?
I'm not exactly sure. I was wondering if that was maybe a message or something I should be aware of. Do you know anything that I don't, just off the top of your head?
I don't. I'm just going to guess some faulty cropping somewhere. But hopefully that can be fixed.
Well, apparently it can't be fixed until you put a different picture up because, you know, what happens is I think radio.com pulls from a picture that might be on the website. But, you know, obviously just joking about that. On a media front, though, and Dave, you probably, I don't know if you heard about this, you hear about Viacom, CBS, and all the job losses today?
No, what happened there?
Oh, well, big. So we do not work for CBS. We work for Entercom. We were sold by CBS, Les Moonves, before He took a tumble, decided there was no future for CBS with radio, so he sold us off, which is great. We work for a great company, but they slashed 400 jobs today. Some people that you might know on the air. It was interesting because Mark Knoller was reported early in the day to be one of those on the chopping block. He's a very well-known anchor reporter. Most KMOX listeners, I think, know him and what Mark sounds like. And then all of a sudden, he wasn't out of a job. So strange developments. But we do have plenty to cover. I should mention on the roundtable tomorrow, Jane Duker, Jack Coder, Alderman Coder, and Gene Evans, the executive director of the State Republican Party. Look, what's going on in Minneapolis right now is just devastating. And as bad as we had it during Ferguson, I think it might even be worse with the devastation, the looting. And you just have to shake your heads. Now, you also have to keep in mind, I saw Bruce Franks, you know, tweet about this earlier. There are people from all over the country that are going to fly into Minneapolis to try to stir things up. I, for one, don't understand why at least one of these officers, if not two, have not been arrested up until this point. We're going to try to get some of these answers here with WCCO's Susie Jones up in Minneapolis. And Susie, I know how busy you all must be, but I wanted to get a couple of questions in here this afternoon. She covered last night's protests following the death of George Floyd after being restrained by police. Susie, how are you?
I'm hanging in there. It's pretty busy and crazy here.
Well, we probably can relate better than most American cities because of what happened in Ferguson many years ago. And I think a lot of people are just shaking their heads at the amount of violence and the looting and things like that. And look, we have people. I've seen some tweets from people here in St. Louis, like Bruce Franks, who's a well-known activist, who are promising to head up to Minneapolis. Do you have a sense, because this is what happened here, of how many of the people that are protesting and maybe even causing the trouble are out-of-towners?
Yeah, that's actually was brought up today, that many of the people that are actually lighting things on fire are not people that live in Minneapolis. I've never seen anything like it. I've lived here my whole life, worked at CCO for almost 25 years, and obviously this is history-making. But we just heard from the mother of Eric Garner. I'm right at the scene of where this happened on Monday night. Of course, her son, Eric, died at the hands of police in New York City, and it took her 5 years to get justice in that case, and she was here to really support the crowd. Generally, I'll tell you that people are mad, they're sad, they're frustrated, and in general, you know, 90% of people that are protesting are doing so peacefully. It is this group that ramped it up last night and made things obviously dangerous and difficult. So we'll see what tonight brings.
Well, what, you know, I'm going to ask just because I've seen some videos and some tweets today. Is some of this still going on during the daylight hours, or is it from last night? Because I've seen a couple of videos that make it look like some of it's still occurring today at Target stores and the like.
I was at Target this morning about 9 o'clock, and people were running in. The sprinklers are on inside the store. I mean, I don't know if they got pulled or if there was smoke, but the sprinkler system's going, so it's wet and coming down from the ceiling. People are continuing to run in and grab stuff because obviously they didn't get everything. That's one example during the day happening right now. But again, it's just a bizarre scene. I just listened to Chad Hartman on with a bystander who happens to be over there at this time, and he said there was no police presence, and so there's this sense of kind of a free-for-all in terms of the community. Now, there are about 15, 20 police officers at the third precinct. So for people listening, it's right across the street from this Target. It's kind of a shopping area, and they're kind of standing guard next to the building, and in front of them is a group of protesters, and they're just screaming at the police. They've also been throwing things at the police, water bottles, rocks, different things. And yesterday afternoon, before last night's violence, police were using like rubber bullets and tear gas and pepper spray to get people to move back. So, you know, it's another hot day here. I haven't been back to the third precinct in about an hour because I did, I'll tell you a little side story. This rioting went all the way down Lake Street, which runs through east-west, cuts through the city of Minneapolis, and as far down as probably another mile and a half down, rioting and looting continued. And I interviewed the owner of a jewelry store, Thurston Jewelers, and the owner, Floyd, said that a van drove up, and about 10 guys got out with masks and machine guns, and they shot their way into his jewelry store, and they stole over $200,000 worth of jewels and damaged all the beautiful furniture because the place was built in 1910. You know, it's in the family, and it's all just destroyed. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, today Reverend Al Sharpton has just finished talking to this group over here. And he said it, you know, that Mike Freeman has what he needs right now. That's our Hennepin County attorney to charge these four officers with murder and aiding and abetting because no one stepped in.
Susie, one final question here. Obviously, a lot of people around the country are wondering about arrests in this case. And are you hearing anything from the prosecutor? What is the status of that?
They're pretty mum. They're pretty quiet. The chief of police has spoken a couple of times. The mayor has spoken a couple of times. The mayor is asking that they be charged as well. So no one has come forth to say anything. Now, just another, I keep having these side thoughts. Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman decided in 2016 not to prosecute a young man named Jamar Clark, who had been killed over on the north side of the city. And it was also caught on video. It was at night. It was different. It was dark. Different circumstances.
Right.
They claim he had a weapon. You know, that was a lot up in the air. But Freeman decided not to charge the officers in that case. And it was not as bad as this. But I think if he doesn't charge them, or if he charges them and they get acquitted, we can't even imagine what's going to happen in the city.
You know, just looking at the visuals, and I put a couple of things up on Twitter here. There, you know, things were bad here during Ferguson. What I'm seeing from the videos and the pictures, they're worse there in Minneapolis, and I hope you get through tonight. Susie Jones, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on here this afternoon on KMOX in St. Louis. Good luck with everything.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time.
It's just so nonsensical. I'm looking at a picture here. I mean, you know how you honor the death of a man who was murdered by a cop? And I feel like he was murdered by this cop. You steal air fryers. And there's actually a picture of, you know, when you go out of the checkout in a Target or something like that, there are those kiosks that might have, well, sometimes they're freezers that have soft drinks and things like that. Or there are some that have just batteries and you can twirl it around. Somebody took the whole kiosk of batteries and yanked it outside the Target. And again, some of these things, just the visuals that are going on, they're not in the middle of the night. I remember when I went to Ferguson that first week after Mike Brown was killed and we did the Friday roundtable out there, Maria Chappelle Nadal, before she got super loopy. Maybe she was pretty crazy at that point, but, you know, we at least got along. She was on the roundtable. She was very honest. She said, look, you guys, you know, you probably want to get out of here before dark because that's when things got really, really terrible. And we saw the visuals, but this is happening during the middle of the day up there, some of the looting, and you're seeing the freeway was shot down. One of the freeways in L.A. was shot down. So I think that St. Louis needs to be on alert tonight and not to play, you know, scare tactic games, but I think there are protests that are being planned in a variety of locations across the country right now, not only Minneapolis. So I hope this doesn't come to a neighborhood near you.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show.
When you're out of my sight, you must constantly Twitter me exactly what you're up to.
Follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Reardon, KMOX.
All right, welcome back. Yeah, roundtable tomorrow. Gene Evans, the executive director of the Missouri Republican Party, St. Louis Alderman Jack Carter, Jane Duker, all on the panel tomorrow. And also a preview of the Mighty Pines new album and a great show they're doing on Saturday night at the pageant, which is all virtual. Neil Sausage from the Mighty Pines reached out last week. He had no idea that I was a fan. He said that he listened to the show and the new album comes out tomorrow. So I'm excited because these guys are great. I saw them a few years ago at the Roots and Blues Music Festival. You know, I think, look, a lot of people are confused right now. You don't know what to believe. There's a lot of anger. There's, you know, things bubbling underneath the surface right now related to this pandemic that I'm not real comfortable with because I think people are just sort of bursting at the seams. And I saw this summed up quite well in a piece for Real Clear Politics written by Caleb Lataro, who is a senior fellow at George Washington University for Cyber Homeland Security. And he's with me this afternoon. He wrote a piece called The COVID Guidance Muddle, and I think it summed it up quite nicely. Caleb, how are you?
Doing great. It's great to be here.
I think you summed up what a lot of people are feeling. And every day I seem to have a conversation along these lines with friends of mine about the confusion. And as every day goes by, it seems like there's more conflicting information. And that's leaving a lot of people out there just wondering, what the hell should they think with all this, right?
Absolutely. And you know, I think that's one of the sad stories of this pandemic is that we've really had a failure of messaging. You know, you had in the early days, obviously, scientific evidence, you know, it took them a while to understand this pandemic. So you can understand the beginning that, you know, some of the things they said, they just didn't know enough. But then you start seeing things like you see the CDC say nobody should be wearing masks. And then they caveat that by saying because we need to hold them back for healthcare workers. And then later on, you see, people should be wearing masks now, you know, without, you know, there's kind of this failure to, you know, and same things with social distancing. You see, on the one hand, the CDC saying, you know, you have to maintain social distancing. That's why we have this economic lockdown, because we've got to keep people spaced apart. And on, you know, on right beside that, essentially, they say, but if you're on a plane, a train, an automobile, you know, you're driving somewhere, you're flying somewhere, you're going to be crammed in like sardines and touching all these surfaces and interacting with all these people, and that's okay. And so, I mean, I think that's one of the challenges here is really what we need is the government to come out and say, look, here's the deal. You know, you're going to, you know, here are all these contradictions. Here's how to think about all this, and here's why we're saying these things.
You know, I think one of the key developments for me, and this just adds to the confusion, was a week ago. I think you mentioned this in the piece, was this notion about surfaces. And it was of particular interest to me because for weeks I'd been asking some of the healthcare professionals here in St. Louis and elsewhere. You know, I know that the virus is found on surfaces. The science tells us that. We had one subway car. I guess it was 3 days later they found the coronavirus. But the question then is, can you get the infection from that surface? And I think there's a lot more questions about that. And I think they now know that that's a minimal chance. So that, you know, you think about that alone when it comes to businesses and what we're allowed to do, social distancing. I think that's a game changer if, in fact, that's the case. But now we still have businesses because they think surfaces are important. They have to be careful. They want to make sure there's no liability. They're still going to have cleaning to the level that may be even not necessary at this point. I mean, is that wrong to think of it that way?
Well, you know, it's interesting because there was a study actually published in Science Magazine, actually, I think it was yesterday, that actually said, you know, it's not even the droplets, it's actually these aerosols. So when you speak, you know, up to now, there's been, you know, so again, you know, you kind of have this evolution where in the early days, they say, you know, it's, you know, contaminated surfaces, wash your hands all the time, don't wear a mask. Then it became, you know, wear a mask because you just got to stop those big, thick droplets from coming out. And now, you know, you're seeing more and more of these studies saying, you know, it might actually be aerosols, which basically means these real tiny little particles that actually we might need to go more than 6 feet. And right now you have the WHO saying, I think it's 3 feet. You have CDC saying 6 feet. You have different countries with different distances. But now you're starting to see literature saying, you know what, 6 feet isn't enough. We got to go way, way further than 6 feet apart. And I think, you know, this is one of those things is that legitimately the science is evolving in real time. We are actually seeing, you know, what science is, which is we have, you know, what's true today is maybe turns out to be false tomorrow. That's simply the process of science. But what you're not seeing is how do we communicate that to the public? Every time one of these findings comes out there, you see all these headlines and the same day, different studies saying conflicting things, and you don't have anyone, a communicator in chief. You don't have anyone that's kind of sitting there every day piercing through all that and saying, you know, here's what we understand at this moment. Here's what we don't understand at this moment. And here's why we're making the decisions that we are. It's kind of piercing through that. So you don't have the members of the public trying to figure out, well, gee, this one says this and this one says that. What do I do here, essentially?
Yeah, the confusion is just growing, like I said, by leaps and bounds, maybe even every hour. And as you were giving me that answer, I see the story on CNN about 6 feet may not be enough to permit transmission. So you get to stuff like that, and people are already cooped up. They're tired. They feel like they've done their part to reduce the spread of the infection, to overwhelm the healthcare system. You start getting information like that out, and I think people are fed up at this point. And that, unfortunately, is going to lead to behavior. We saw some of it at the Lake of the Ozarks over the weekend. And a business owner said something to me today that I may not have, and I probably didn't think of it this way. You have businesses that are spending a lot of money to stay in business, and some of them might not even be able to stay in business after that. And they would at least hope that the employees would have the respect, maybe not even the customers, just the employees would have the respect to not go out and take part in behavior that is somewhat questionable because of the resources that they're pouring into this whole thing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, one of the challenges is, you know, let's say you are a small business owner and you want to reopen. What do you do? You know, what are the things you need to do here to reopen? And obviously there's, you know, governments are stepping forward and saying, well, you know, here's what you have to do to comply on paper to get your green light that you can reopen. But, you know, if you want to be safe, like, what do you ask your employees to do? It's you know, it's not tractable to tell people, you know, stay in your home under house arrest, especially if the weather gets nicer as we hit summertime. You know, it's fine for the government to say everybody stay locked up. It's just not going to happen. People, you know, I mean, no. You have here in Virginia, you have the governor himself, you know, saying you absolutely have to wear a mask if you're in crowds. And what does he do? He goes out the boardwalk with all these big crowds and poses, you know, with his arms around people with no mask. And I think that also the fact that our public authorities, you know, public officials, whether, you know, here in the U.S., you have all kinds of examples. Obviously, in the U.K. right now, the headlines around Boris Johnson's aide. You know, that's the other thing is you have these officials saying you have to do this, and then they do precisely the opposite. And so, you know, again, it creates this thing of, you know, what do I do if I want to be a safe, responsible person? What do I do? You know, what is the guidance for me as an individual, as an employee, as a business owner? You know, these are these critical things that I think is creating all this concern here.
By the way, something I'm going to talk about in the next hour, there was a piece in the Washington Post this morning about how some business owners, and this they actually cited people from L.A. to my neck of the woods here in Missouri to, you know, where you are on the East Coast, where there are some businesses that are pledging to keep customers out who wear their face masks, not who don't wear their face masks. So a lot of interesting things happening right now, and it does keep people very confused, unfortunately. Kyle, thanks so much for the piece. Thanks for joining me this afternoon on KMOX. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, Chris Raby is going to join me for his Thursday afternoon Raby Rant segment this afternoon. And yeah, I saw this piece in the Washington Post this morning, and I thought it was interesting because maybe my instinct was when I saw it, I thought it was going to be kind of a hit piece on this part of the country, red state. People say, no, you're not going to wear, you know, masks in my store. But some of these folks are out east and even in the L.A. area. And it was an interesting take. I'm sure a lot of people are not going to agree with it, but we'll get to that in the next hour. Also, she was supposed to join me on Tuesday afternoon. We had to reschedule. Marina Zenovich, who is the director of the new two-part documentary Lance, that was a 30 for 30 on ESPN. Part one aired on Sunday night. Part two airs this weekend. I've gotten a chance to see both parts. So Marina's coming up here in the next hour, right ahead of Mr. Raby. So is mail-in voting really safe? Paul DeGregorio, who's a great local resource here, U.S. and international election expert, is going to join us next on KMOX after Carol gets us up to date with all the top stories.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Finally, some nice weather moving into St. Louis. I guess Steve is covering some bases here, and he does say that we do have some scattered storms, and there is a rain chance tonight. Actually, I'm looking at that. That's a good chance, so let me not downplay that. Man, I thought that we were done with this. I guess not until tomorrow. You actually just sent the forecast over, and now I'm seeing some rain that bleeds into tomorrow. Let me just go down the forecast. High of 78 for this afternoon. Scattered storms, rain chances 70%. Mid to low 70s this evening. Scattered storms turning more isolated after 9 p.m. Lower rain chances overnight for Friday. A high of 76, and then we go overnight down to 55. So could get a sprinkle on Saturday morning. But other than that, I think we're in pretty good shape. Or maybe a sprinkle tomorrow morning as well, and less humid as well. I wanted to look at just as we get into the beginning part of next week, because I think we're really going to look at a great stretch of weather from Friday through Wednesday, Thursday, maybe even through the next weekend with no precipitation in the forecast. Steve, of course, will join us a little bit later this afternoon live at 4:40 during Total Information PM. Maria Zenovich in the next hour. She's the director of the new two-part documentary Lance, which sort of followed up The Last Dance on ESPN as a 30 for 30. Part one aired on Sunday night. Part two airs this weekend. Part two gets pretty interesting. I will tell you, you know, if you watch part one, it goes into some of the history. And if you're a cyclist, you knew a lot of that stuff, or if you've read any of Armstrong's books. But part two gets into, I think, a different territory. And he gets emotional at times that I didn't expect. And I will tell Marina this when we have her come on in the next hour. You know, I have mixed feelings to this day about Lance Armstrong. And I think the documentary shows that a lot of people do. Ian Scher is going to join me this afternoon. The president's going to issue an executive order regarding social media. I'm sort of holding off on my thoughts on this until the executive order is released. I think it's just silly. And, you know, I'm not crazy about what Jack is doing at Twitter with the fact checks, because I think it's not going to be applied fairly. I mean, there's a lot of things from AOC to Nancy Pelosi, to Joe Biden, to local politicians, Republican and Democrat, that put things out on Twitter that you should be scratching your head about. But whether or not they should be fact-checked, and by the way, fact-checked inaccurately by Twitter in the instance that occurred the other morning, I think is ridiculous. Then again, I'm not happy with an executive order trying to clamp down on social media either. Ian Scheer from CNET a little bit later this afternoon. Let's talk about this whole notion of mail-in voting and whether or not it really is a threat. How safe is it? Could there be mail fraud? Paul DeGregorio has been with us before. He's a U.S. and international elections expert and former chairman of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission with us this afternoon. Hey, Paul, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Mark. Watching 5 grandkids today.
Wow. Is it your birthday today or was that yesterday?
It's Monday.
I think the reason I know that is I saw it on Facebook. So happy birthday. We'll just throw that in there. Look, there's a lot of people talking about the mail-in voting. We've had you on plenty of times talking about elections issues from around the globe and here in St. Louis and St. Louis County. So let's talk about just the issue with mail-in voting and whether or not there's the potential for fraud. So even when Twitter corrected and fact-checked the president, I understand, and this has gotten out there, that even some of their claims weren't necessarily completely true. So I'm going to trust you here, Paul. Tell me about mail-in voting and whether or not there's fraud possibilities here.
Well, first I'll say there's fraud possibility in any method of voting, whether, you know, you're voting in person, people can be bribed, and they have been bribed. And, you know, voting by mail, there's opportunities, but there's opportunities for fraud, you know, in the voting process, many different methods that are used to allow people to vote. I'm a believer in all mail balloting and giving people that opportunity to cast their ballot. Certainly right now under these circumstances, I think it's appropriate.
So, I mean, we have, in fairness, we have mail-in balloting when we have absentee balloting. If someone casts a ballot in the mail, don't they? Although I think in some cases you have to do that in person, don't you?
Well, you know, in Missouri and Illinois, too, you have absentee provisions and you have the ability to go to an office, election office, and vote early absentee if you need to. There's reasons that you have to check to vote absentee. And the legislature's made some change for the August and November election regarding that. But, you know, if you just look right now, Mark, in this election that's coming up on June 2nd, the municipal election in St. Louis County and on the Missouri side, people are choosing to vote by mail. Right now, I checked this morning, they've had 76,000 people apply for an absentee ballot. That's an all-time record. I mean, that even beats the 63,000 that applied for the presidential election in November of 2016. So you at least can see in St. Louis County, people are wanting to vote by mail, and you know, and they should be allowed to because of the circumstances that they may not want to go to a polling place. And obviously, many of our poll workers are, you know, in the over 65 category, in the risk category, and election jurisdictions all over the country, including in our jurisdictions, have lost people who just don't want to work at the polls. So they've cut back on polling places, but people are certainly choosing to vote by mail for this election, and I suspect they're going to be doing it even more so for the August and November elections.
Are there different safeguards in place? All right, so because people want to know, they sign their ballot, they send it in. What are the safeguards in place to make sure that it hasn't been fraudulently signed or it's not, you know, not a faked ballot or something along those lines?
You know, those are good concerns, and those concerns that people have had all the time with absentee or mail balloting systems. But, you know, when you apply for an absentee ballot, for instance, in Missouri, in many counties, you can apply online. You can print off your ballot. You can email it actually to the St. Louis County Board of Elections, and they'll mail it to you. And a bipartisan team checks your signature when it comes in. And then you send your ballot in by mail, or you bring it in, and you can do that for a relative, and they check your signature. A bipartisan team, like they do at the polling places, checks your signature, verifies that that's your signature, and they'll count your ballot. Now, one of the ways that they have found voter fraud, and we've seen it in the city, we've seen it in the county, we've seen it across the country, is, you know, they check signatures, and they see that signatures are the same. And, you know, they have a way of detecting that, and then they go after people. I mean, the mayor of Berkeley was recently charged with voter fraud by doing that. So it does happen. There's such things as ballot harvesting, But the Missouri legislature has made it a little more complicated for the November election because they're requiring people under 65 without any kind of health conditions to get a notary. And that's going to make it difficult for people to vote because, you know, you have to find a notary, your bank or somewhere to get a notary. And what we found across the country, if you look for how voter fraud has occurred, it's mainly these notaries that are hired by the political parties or their political people themselves that go around and harvest votes and notarize ballots. So in some sense, you know, they might be making it more not only more difficult for people to vote, but making it maybe easier for some people to harvest ballots and cheat.
Is there anything, I kind of want to look beyond just this year, and I think we've talked about some of these things in the past, but what could be on the horizon with technology? Let me put it this way. I want to vote on my phone or my computer, and I'd like to do it in a safe way, but we're doing everything with our phones, our iPads, our computers, and it's interesting to see some of the technology, Paul, just in my world change with movies, for example, in my movie critic role, where a lot of these are now going to be digital screening you know, movies, and there's pin codes and things along those lines. And I guess that's why I bring it up, because I would think that at some point in the future, we would have a safe, secure way for people to vote online. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're not wrong at all. And, you know, if you lived in Estonia right now, that's how you would be voting. And Switzerland uses internet voting, and Canada has used it for some elections. So there are ways, you know, to have secure online voting. But, you know, you have to have tremendous safeguards in place and security in place. Now, there is technology that's being used. For instance, let's just say you apply for an absentee ballot. You can track that ballot, that it was received by the election board. There's an app, and the election board itself, when they mail that ballot to your home, they will get a notification from the post office that Mark Reardon's ballot was delivered to your house. So they can track that. Your ballot. And then when it comes back to the election board, they can track that too. And you can track that your ballot was received. So that's new. That has not been done before. So that's new technology that St. Louis County is using. And I suspect other jurisdictions are going to use that. So technology is going to allow us, you know, to track ballots to help prevent fraud, but also to make it easier for people to participate in elections. Because, you know, some of this nonsense against all mail balloting is more political than anything else. And I hate to see that, because we want to encourage people to participate. We don't want them to think that, well, it's all fraud and I'm not going to participate, because I think in every election, we want the maximum participation we can get.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think we all know that this pandemic is going to force us very quickly into some areas that probably were inevitable in the first place. And it's just speeding up that process. Paul DeGregorio, always great to have you on KMWX. How are you holding up overall? You said you're watching the grandkids. Things going well through all this?
Yeah, they are. They are. I'm watching them so my daughters and son-in-laws can work from home without having 3, 4, 5, and 4-month-olds at home. So we're keeping tight protocols. You know, we're feeling good, and these grandkids are keeping us young.
Hey, send the address. I'll drop my 5-year-old off for a play date at any time, Paul. How's that? You need more on your plate,
as
I think.
Long,
I feel
as
that.
As long as you're keeping safe protocols, and I watch you on Facebook, and I think you are. So thanks, Mark.
All right, thank you. Have a great week.
All right, you're welcome.
2:46, Paul DeGregorio with us this afternoon. We'll come back here after the break, and I got a couple things I want to toss in here before the end of the hour. Marina Zenovich in the next hour. She is the acclaimed filmmaker who is responsible for the new 2-part ESPN documentary, Lance. Chris Raby in the next hour with a Raby rant, and Ian Scheer from CNET at 4:20 with this executive order from the president regarding social media.
Day mornings at 8:30, Charlie Brennan and Amy Marks-Kors provide perspective on KMOX and KMOX. KMOX.com.
2:51 at the Voice of St. Louis. Yeah, Dave Klein running the music way too loud there, as usual. I'm just seeing if he's paying attention. Hey, Klein, I do have a question for you.
I was waiting until you were starting to talk.
Scenes.
Ah. I learned
see.
That from
hey,
you.
You know, People always ask me how this is going from home, and I always say, I think it's going pretty well. And I do, and I hope you know this, I always say, but thankfully, because of my two producers and everything you guys do behind the scenes.
How about old Fred Mottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
That's right. You guys, I mean, there's still nobody at the station, basically, right?
Yeah, it's a handful of people. It's weird. It's still weird. It's something you never really get used to. Now, I will say the Corona commute that I've gotten used to every morning and afternoon is pretty nice, but you're seeing, you know, a little bit more volume on the highways. But overall, it hasn't been bad. It's still a weird feeling being down here without everybody. You miss some people. And it's going to be nice to get back to somewhat normal after a while.
Wait. I know what you wanted to say there. You said you miss some people, but the next line, you miss the next line. And some people, you're glad that you don't have to see. Let's just be honest about that.
Not what I was going to say. No, of course not.
I'm guessing some people might say that about me, Dave, but I dearly miss you. And I asked you, one of the questions I had for Dave earlier this hour was, hey, did I leave a case of Andrea's steak sauce on my desk? Because I put a picture up on Twitter and on social media earlier today. For those of you who are of age, and Dave is a lot younger than I am by, I think, more than 20 years. So you haven't, or you're far away from the reading glasses. Now I got Chris Myhill sending me a picture. So he's put his foot up at my desk. He's just kind of lounging at my desk. It's good to see my desk.
We look at your disgusting desk every day. And we have not
cleaned
it.
Did I not clean it before I left?
Of course not. No, you clean that thing like twice a year. That's it.
And every time I clean it, people think I got fired because it's so tidied up that it looks like I was escorted out of the building. Now I lost my train of thought.
And you give it 2 days. You give it 2 days, it's back to normal. But you were talking about the Andrea steak sauce that you left.
Yeah, so because I put this picture up on Twitter and social of the reading glasses, those people who have reading glasses will know that, and my wife has to hear these complaints. I have, like, I don't know, 12 pairs of reading glasses. I just ordered a bunch of new ones from Amazon. And everybody who wears reading glasses knows exactly what's happening. You can't ever find them. You can't find them ever. So then you have all these pairs. They're who knows where. Well, I usually find them, and this is where I found about 8 of them in my car today, next to, like, in between the console and the passenger seat, because I put them on the passenger seat, and then they sort of slip in between there. So I found, literally, like, 8 pairs.
Well, that's a tough spot to get them out of there.
Well, kind of reach down there, Dave, and you grab them and you pick them up, and that's what I did. But then you actually retweeted that and said that there were a few pair on my desk at work, which I think that might be fake news.
There's at least one. I know there's one, but I'm sure there's. If I dig through all the trash on your desk, I'm sure I could find a couple. Now, you, on several occasions, have been looking for your reading glasses at work, and you've left them
on
your head or on your shirt.
On my shirt.
Yeah,
that's another thing that happens. And sometimes, if I have a hat on at home in particular, I don't know. Look, it's just one of those things, and you have to deal with it. Every time I order more pair, then I find the ones that I lost, but it's just a part of getting old. Hey, I'm going to address this maybe a little bit more after the top of the hour. I've been asking just friends of mine. I haven't gone to Facebook with this, but maybe I will tomorrow. We'll talk about it on the roundtable. And I'm not saying that this necessarily matters in the whole scheme of how serious this disease is or this infection is, but do you know anyone, Dave, currently? I'm just curious. Do you know anyone currently who has the coronavirus, or anyone, I'll just say this, in the month of May that's had the coronavirus in your life? Whether it's here in St. Louis or anywhere else.
I knew two people in April that had it and got over it, but in the month of May, not that I know of.
Same for me and most of the people that I talk with in this area, and I think the numbers are pretty good, so I think that's important. But if you go back to March, I knew 3 and sort of peripherally 4 people who had the coronavirus. You remember we had somebody who worked in our building, Mike Ferguson, who came on the air and started telling us his story. He ended up in the ICU. So at the beginning of all this, I think there were people out there. And again, I'm not saying this because I feel like there aren't new infections or people still getting the coronavirus. But one of the difficulties in maybe inspiring people to be safe and do the right things with social distancing, as confusing as the messages are, is that if you don't see some of these things play out in real life, I mean, just look at Minneapolis and what's happening up there. Those visuals are very powerful. We haven't had those really in the last few weeks from the coronavirus. We saw a lot of video early on, you know, New York, and then you have mass graves and all those things, and that scared the hell out of people. But I think more and more more detachment, because especially in Missouri and Southern Illinois, the cases are limited, which is a good thing. 256, we'll take a break. I'll get into that a little bit more here after the top of the hour. I have some audio to share from the day. Marina Zenovic, who's the director of Lance, the documentary, The 30 for 30 on ESPN Part 2, airs this weekend. And Chris Raby with a Raby rant in the next hour on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.